Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to Audiobook Connection, behind the scenes with the creative teams. I'm Becky Parker Geist and I'm your host. Audiobook Connection is your place to learn about the audiobook creative process in discussions between the authors, narrators, producers, and post-production teams that bring them all together, as well as guests who have listened to the audiobooks and have questions for the creative teams. This podcast is sponsored by Pro Audio Voices, helping great stories come alive through audiobook production and marketing. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Audiobook Connection, behind the scenes with the creative teams. And today we're going to be chatting with Dave Jackson. Dave has been podcasting since 2005. That's like before most of us even heard about podcasting or heard the word. He is an award-winning Hall of Fame podcaster. He's got thousands of episodes under his belt, literally. And his School of Podcasting show was the first podcast about podcasting, and he was the first person to start a website dedicated to helping people launch successful podcasts. In fact, before launching this podcast, Audiobook Connection, I went through School of Podcasting and learned a lot in that process. Dave is also the author of the book Profit from Your Podcast. And Dave, welcome to the show.
Becky, thanks for having me. So glad to be here.
So let's start at the very beginning. What first got you into podcasting in the first place? How did that all begin?
Yeah, it's funny because at the time, my background's in teaching. So I had taught a lot in the corporate world and I'm not making this up. I used to teach classes on how to send email and what the internet was because nobody knew what it was.
Right.
And so at the time I was building websites for people and I had built a website for musicians. Because that was another one of my hobbies. And this friend of mine came back and he said, hey, you know how I had missed the MySpace boat, again, dating myself. But I'd seen a number of things come and go and come and go. And I was always missing the trend. And He goes, I can tell you what the next trend's going to be. And I go, great, what is it? And he goes, podcasting. And I went, okay. So I go to Google, I type in pod. They're 1.5 pages. That's it. And I was like, I think we broke the internet. How do you spell that again? Type in 1.5 pages. And I was like, wow. And so I kind of pieces parted one together. And I took my blog and turned it into a podcast. And within probably 2 or 3 weeks, I remember getting a voicemail from Michael Van Laar from Nuremberg, Germany. And I'm in the middle of nowhere, Ohio. And I was like, wait a minute. Some guy on the other side of the planet not only found my show, but liked it. And that's when I was like, okay, this scratches every itch I have because it's global. There, you don't have to worry about your signal not being strong enough. It's techie. It's not as techie as it used to be, but you had to be techie. Mm-hmm. And then you can be as creative as you want. And then for me, being a teacher, it really scratched my teacher itch as well. So At that point, I went, okay, this has the potential to be huge. And every year it just gets bigger and bigger.
Right. Yeah. I love that experience of having somebody call me up and ask me some question that I just talked about on the podcast or something. And it's a cool experience. Yeah. So what would you say are some of the top reasons why someone should start a podcast?
Yeah, there's a few. One is I want to be seen as an expert. Mm-hmm. So I don't do it anymore, but I had a weight loss podcast for years because I thought if I was the host, it would force me to lose weight. And it did. And then it didn't. And then it did. And then it didn't. But I always explain, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a trainer. I'm just a person like you in the basement trying to lose weight. And yet I would get these insanely detailed medical questions. And I'd be like, why? I explain, I'm not an expert, but because I had the podcast, you must know this stuff. So if you want to be seen as an expert, it's a great tool for that. If you want to keep your brand in front of people, or if you want to be an expert, maybe do a weekly show that's 20 minutes long. If I want to keep my brand in front of people, maybe I'm just going to do 3 times a week, quick little 5-minute, here's a tip, brought to you by your friends at such and such. Mm-hmm. So you can use it to keep your brand in front of people. I had a client of mine once. I asked him, like, how's the podcast going? And he's like, oh, I guess okay, whatever. And I'm like, well, how are your downloads? He goes, I never look. He goes, I just know I have people that wouldn't give me the time of day. And now I can get those people to be an interview. He goes, so what if I had said, hey, can I take you to coffee and pick your brain? They'd be like, get out of here, kid. You bother me. He goes, but if I say, would you like to come on my podcast? Now they're bringing me back. And so he's building his network through that.
Yeah.
Those are some of the, and then of course, obviously, I don't understand why every coach or author or anybody doesn't have a podcast, because what it does is when you pick a schedule, and I always say, record a couple episodes, look at your life and say, hey, can I do this once a week? And if the answer is no, you're not doing a weekly podcast. Right. So many people pick a schedule and try to squeeze their life into their podcast. I'm like, no, do it the other way.
Yeah.
Record a couple episodes and then pick a schedule that will fit into your life. And so people go through that. And when you can publish on a regular schedule, now you're automatically reliable. When you deliver good content, they like your stuff because you're helpful. And then I always say, anytime you can make a point through a personal story. So like when Muhammad Ali died, he was a hero of mine. And when he died, I said, here are like 10 things podcasters can learn from Muhammad Ali. He was completely unique. He was always promoting, super talented, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so I had people that said, hey, he was my champ too. And once they emailed me, now I've got a discussion going on.
Right.
And so I'm now reliable. They like me and they get to know me through these stories. And when you say, oh, by the way, I got a new book out, or hey, I'm selling a course, or if you want to hire me to help you do something, it's not the end of cold calling, but you have much warmer leads than you used to.
I do love that opportunity to, when you're talking about building network and also combining that with being seen as an expert, because when you're networking with experts, you're in that sphere. And I think that's great. We have some interesting podcasts that are coming up that we're just going to be launching soon for some of our clients. One of them we actually is where the author is bringing on guests to be interviewed by characters from her book. And
now that's unique. I love that idea.
Yeah. And it's the information is really targeted like to young adults, and the characters from the books are dogs. And that's going to be quite fun, I think.
Well, that's it. I just had a discussion on this about some people consider themselves weird because they're not like other people. And I go, uniqueness is a bonus. If you look at Bob Dylan, Stevie Nicks, Tom Petty, Rod Stewart, all have very unique voices and all have careers that have lasted decades.
Yeah.
So when you have something that sets you and that makes you a little different, hey, I want my character, the dog, to interview you. That's going to be like everything else. Some people are going to like it and other people are not. But the good thing is you're not going to sound like every other podcast is just interviewing people. So
right.
I love that idea just for the creativity of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like we spend so much of our lives trying to conform, and then we get into a conversation like this and just really highlighting how important that uniqueness is that each of us has and what we can bring that and how others really appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And when you hear any of those singers or, you know, anybody that's unique, it just makes you stand out, whether you want to or not. I know Todd Cochran is a friend of mine. He runs the Blueberry podcast hosting.
Yeah.
And Todd has a very unique voice. It's not a deep radio guy. This is Todd. He sounds like this. And the minute you hear Todd, you go, that's Todd Cochran. I know that voice anywhere.
Yeah.
And so that's a bonus.
Yeah.
And when podcasting first started, one of the things that made it just everybody's like, this is the best thing ever, is because people weren't talking like this, traffic and weather on the tens. All right.
Yeah.
People talked normal and they were talking about things that you couldn't talk about other places and you couldn't get anybody's attention. So
I'm
worried sometimes that everybody's trying to make it sound like radio. And I go, no, that's, I don't know. In Ohio, our radio stations are not good. They're 30% commercials and
more like talking on the telephone.
It is.
You know,
I would say a podcast is a conversation with the boring parts removed.
Yeah.
Because there are going to be some questions that don't land and we take tangents and things like that. That's fine. Just take them out.
Yeah. Let's talk a little about the podcast audience. Like give us some ideas on how to grow that audience.
Yeah. It really comes down to two things. Every podcast answer boils down to this. And so the first one is, why are you doing this? And we talked about the advantages there. And then the other one is the who. Mm. And you have to get as detailed as you can. Because if I say, you know what? I'm going to do a show for widows. Great. You sound like you really niched down, but you got to realize there's a big difference between a widow who is 38 and lost their spouse in a war or a car accident or something unexpected. And then you got the 87-year-old widow that lost their spouse to natural causes. So when you say, hey, it's time to get back out on the dating scene, that's probably not going to resonate with the 87-year-old.
Right. Yeah.
So the more you can know about them, the better. And there are tips and tricks I teach. Like one is go to Amazon, obviously, type in your subject, and there'll be a bunch of books and stuff that come up, and look for 2- and 4-star reviews. So why 2 and 4? Because 1 is just going to say worst book ever. That's not helpful. Yeah. 5 is going to be best book ever. Also not helpful. But 2 would be like, wow, this book was not very good, but they did talk about this. And 4 would be like, I like this book for the most part. I wish it would have mentioned this. So they're giving you much more constructive feedback on what they're looking for. And there are other places. There's Reddit and YouTube and things like that where you can go and see what your target audience is by figuring out what they want to talk about and then looking for that subject and see if you can find some sort of community where people are talking about it. And then as much as, look, I promote on social media, it's a trickle, because when I'm on Facebook, I'm catching up with my nieces and nephews. I'm not really in the mood to hear your four-part series on sex trafficking or whatever the super serious subject is.
Right.
So the thing we're finding out is networking with other podcasters. So if you have a similar subject, then reach out to that person. And this is where some people, again, bring that radio mentality. Mm-hmm. And it's not radio. We're both not on at 7:30 in the morning where we're up against each other. You can listen to Becky on Monday. You can listen to me on Tuesday. You can listen to Daniel on Wednesday, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And just cross promote each other.
Yeah.
And that seems to work. Being guests on other podcasts can help. None of them are. We're all looking for that. To me, it's about 3 feet tall, about 1.5 feet wide, this giant golden light switch that I could just flip up and get 10,000 downloads. Yeah. And I have not found that yet.
Yeah.
But the other one is I had a guy on my show, Jack. I always butcher his last name. I want to say it's Reicher or Resire or something. We'll just call him Jack. But he does a show called The Darknet Diaries, and he gets hundreds of thousands of downloads per episode. And I asked him, I go, What's the magic?
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, I slowly, specifically, and confidently ask my audience to share. And I went, okay, got it. Slowly, confidently. Okay, what else do you do? And he goes, oh, that's it. And I said, wait, there's got to be more to it. And I said, well, then tell me about your launch. And this is the one I think people go a little light on. And he said he found people, number one, that would tell him the truth, because mom is going to tell you she loves it.
Right.
And he said, here, listen to this episode and then answer these questions. Number one, did you listen to the whole thing? Okay, number two, if you didn't listen to the whole thing, where did you stop and why? And number three was, what was your big takeaway? And then number four was, on a scale from 1 to 10, where 10 is, I'm going to tell everybody I know, how likely are you to share this with a friend? And he said, if I got a 7 or an 8, he goes, to me, that was a C kind of grade. He goes, I was looking for A's and B's. And he goes, and I would just go back to the editing thing. And I'm like, all right, this isn't quite ready yet. So when he'd say something like, hey, I see we're at the 28-minute mark. We've been talking about this for a while. So obviously you like this topic. And hey, could you do me a favor? And actually, this is going to make you look good too. If you know somebody who would enjoy this episode, could you share it with them? You're probably there on your phone anyway, because your friend's going to love you because you're sharing this great content and I get to grow my audience. It would just be the best. Or you can just tell them to go to darknetdiaries.com. So that's how he did it. Yeah. I heard other people, I totally understand this. When we start to promote ourselves, we get really squirrely. We feel salesy. Mm-hmm. We go back to the old 1970s used car sales guy that's going to sell you a bucket of bolts. And so our pitch is, hey, if you want to, you don't have to, but like if you could share it or something or whatever, my website.com. Okay, thanks. And you're like, wait, what was that? What was that? Why is my show growing? So always promote your website. That's one. But just ask your audience. And I was like, it can't be that simple, but it is to a certain extent. Again, not a 10,000 download switch, but in theory, if it's good content, they should want to share it with people. And that goes back to knowing who your audience is.
Right.
Because if you try to be everything to everyone, that's not going to work. But I have found that, you know, there are things like you can advertise in newsletters that are about your niche and things like that. But in the end, and that, again, kind of works, but we're trying to find people that listen to podcasts. And so the best place to find those are on other shows where people are listening. And so instead of seeing your other shows that are similar to yours as competition, look at them as partners. And hey, I'll promote your show if you promote mine. And of course, you want to keep your integrity there. I don't want to promote a show that I go, ooh, I never listened to that.
Sure.
And that can get awkward, but that's really it. And then when I did the book, I was talking to people and I said, hey, like, how long did it take you to really grow your audience into where once you started to monetize, it made a difference? And I hear people that want 6 weeks or 6 months or whatever. And they were talking typically 3 years, maybe two. Mm. And nobody wants to hear that answer. But it's one of those things that I just hear it over and over as I listen to people and somebody will answer that question. When did you start making money? It's typically around 3 years. I mentioned this in the book. There's a website, Graphtreon, because we've heard of Patreon. This is Graphtreon. And it's a list of everybody who has agreed to make their numbers public. Mm-hmm. And you can see people are making 5- and 6-figure income per month. And you're like, what? And then you look, oh, they've been doing this for 12 years. No, that one's been doing it for 8. This one's been doing it for 5. If you're getting into podcasting to make money, and the key here is quickly, Uber would probably pay more quickly than a podcast. But once it gets going and you do have your audience starting to tell their friends, it becomes organic that it grows. But those are some of the ways that people are growing their audience.
Yeah. Have you ever tried using that technique after the podcast is well on its way, not during the launch phase? Because part of what I heard you say was that because it was in the launch phase, he was able to go back and edit those episodes in preparation for the first ones out.
Yeah, once it's going, yeah, I actually did something and it was my favorite accident ever. I was going to pick 10 email addresses from my email list. So if you want to monetize, get an email list. I have multiple people that have said, I wish I would have started my email list sooner. So if that's in the plan somewhere down the road, I want to make money with this, get an email list going.
Yeah.
And so I meant to grab 10 addresses out of that. And long story short, the email was like, hey, I'm working on some things and I wanted to take your temperature about how you feel about my show. I'm open to all suggestions. And I'd love to schedule a quick 15-minute with you. And it was supposed to go to 10 people and it went to my entire list. And so I had sent a link to schedule a Zoom meeting. And so for the next 2 weeks, it was back-to-back meetings with my audience. So it was a mistake, but I'm so glad I did it because it was interesting because A, they would say, oh, Dave, what are you talking about? I love your show. And I'd be like, why? And they're like, well, you're funny and you're educational. Those are the two I always hear. Dave, you're entertaining and you're funny. I'm like, okay, great. But then I would, and this is where it was a fun exercise after a while, I'd be like, okay, what's something I could do to make it better? And the key there is, to shut up. And so you end up with this. It's an awkward pause and you just sit there and smile and they'll go, I really, it's fine. No, I can't really think anything. And you just smile and keep looking at them and it gets even more awkward. And you even maybe grab a pen if you're on Zoom so they can see you're ready to write down. Your body language is all about that. And now, not always. If it really gets awkward, I'll be like, you know what? If you think of something, let me know. Because that's what I'm here for. The show I'm making is for you. So if there's anything I can do to make it better. But on occasion, somebody will say something like, well, sometimes I'll fast forward to a thing or this and that. Okay, well, when I say fast forward, it means maybe it's a little too long. Or at the time, I had a cat that kept interrupting my show. And after a while, because it just came a really pain, I just made him like a co-host. And somebody said... At first, I thought the cat thing was cute. And they said, I'm just not a cat person. And that's annoying. And I'm like, all right, good to know. And that was a battle amongst my audience. Some people wanted more cat and other people wanted less. But it really does come down to that. I'm getting ready to go to Denver to speak at Podcast Movement. And if somebody comes up to me and says, oh, wow, you're Dave Jackson. I listen to your show. I love it. I'm going to do an impromptu. Why? Well, okay, you poke the bear. Why do you like it?
Yeah.
And then what can I do different?
Yeah.
And it's... I always think of it like if you're a restaurant, you're not going to open up a restaurant without somebody tasting your food and going, oh, wait, there's too much salt in this.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. If somebody gives you some actual feedback, do your best not to get defensive. Just, ooh, thank you so much for that. I've never thought of it that way. Anything else? Because the more you can make it the way they want it, the more likely are they to tell a friend.
Yeah.
So that's one way. You can do things like Google Forms if you don't want to tie up your calendar for a couple of weeks. Google Forms is free. Some people will do that and then they'll throw in an incentive. Hey, if you fill this out, we're going to be, the poll will be open for the next couple of weeks. And at the end, we're going to give away a $25 gift card to Amazon or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I know some people poo-poo that. They're like, well, then you're going to get people that are signing up just for the Amazon thing. I go, yeah, that's true. That's always a chance of that. But it's hard to get feedback sometimes. But that's where explaining it, like, hey, I'm doing the show for you and I want to make it better. So please, I'm open. I have an extra layer of skin on. You can't hurt my feelings.
Right.
Just explain to them how they're going to benefit by participating.
Yeah. Let's take a short pause and we'll pick up where we left off when we get back.
Frustrated by the royalty rates for your audiobook? Annoyed that when the digital distributors say 70%, they actually mean 70% of 50% or 80% of 70%, neither of which is an actual 70%? Wishing there was a way to earn more from each sale? Pro Audio Voices hears you. Out of our commitment to our author clients, we've created Amplify Audiobooks, a program that provides an actual 65% royalties of the sales price you set, that gives you access to your customers' names and emails so you can reconnect with them and build your community and following, and keeps you in the driver's seat. Create coupon codes or schedule a sale with promotional pricing. Amplify Audiobooks gives you the tools to effectively market your audiobooks and a much higher return on every single purchase. Check it out at proaudiovoices.com or go direct to proaudiovoices.app. And for listeners, visit amplifyaudiobooks.com to find your next great listen. The Amplify Audiobooks app is now available on both app stores.
You mentioned a little while ago, you were talking about if you're going to monetize your podcast, and what if people do want to monetize their podcast? What can you share with us about that? And like, when is that appropriate? When is it even possible? What are your recommendations?
Well, first of all, I want to say this up front. If you don't want to monetize your podcast, you don't have to. I've seen people like, oh, I don't feel like this is successful. And they're like, why? And I'm like, I'm not monetizing. And I'm like, do you want to monetize? And I'm like, not really. And I'm like, well, then you don't have to. I don't make a dime when I ride my bike. It's a hobby. To monetize, the number one way, hands down, like so much more, is selling your own stuff. So whether that's coaching, books, courses, whatever. And the reason for that is we mentioned you've got the know, like, and trust factor. So selling your own stuff by far, hands down. But we all came from a radio background, so we want to go ads. But less than 10% of podcasts get enough downloads to have the big, he said in quotation marks. So the BetterHelps, the Blue Aprons, the Progressive Insurance, you have to have about at least 10,000 downloads per episode after a month. And it's less than 10%. Get that. Now, that doesn't mean you can't have ads. It just means you're not going to have those ads. So I come nowhere near that with my podcast about podcasting, but I've had some pretty good deals from microphone manufacturers and things like that, because they're trying to get to my audience. And that's where having that niche comes into play. So it's not that advertising is out of the question if you're not getting giant numbers, but that's where having a niche can come into play. So we've got selling my own stuff, selling ads, selling other people's stuff. I do at times a pretty decent job with affiliate stuff if you have the right product for the right audience. So this, again, goes back to who is it? I was pimping the Total Gym for about a year because I had one. That's another one. I could talk about it firsthand, why I liked it. I was piggybacking on Chuck Norris and Christy Brinkley. And I finally, after a year, sold one, made my $75 commission, and that was it. And then I found these things called Fit Decks. And I bought one because they looked neat. And every time somebody bought one, I made $1.50. And I said, you know what? These are kind of neat. I dealt myself a workout. And I said, I could see where making this a game with your kids would be great. And that's where I learned that a large chunk of my audience for that weight loss show were women with children. And I made $1.50 every time somebody bought a deck. And they were buying 4 and 5 decks at a time. And I had my phone set up that when PayPal would send me that you've got money kind of message, it would make my phone ring. make a little cha-ching sound. And I would, at the time, I'm teaching Microsoft Excel and I'm just hearing my phone going cha-ching, cha-ching. So I was getting anywhere from $300 to $500 on that one product. And that's really what I found out is it's not usually just ads. It's ads and affiliate marketing. It's ads. And then you get into crowdfunding. So I mentioned Graftreon. The thing about the crowdfunding is, number one, again, it's a crowd. That's step one. It's, I have a sign behind me that says plan, start, grow, and monetize. And a lot of people want to go plan, start, monetize. And I'm like, you can't monetize dust. You got to grow that audience. And so that's one of those things where the crowdfunding can come in handy. But the thing, when I talk to the people from Teachable, when I myself, I've looked into this, I've heard Adam Curry, who has millions of people listen to him, it's usually 3% or less of your audience is going to actually support you that way. And that's depressing as all get out. It's just from my studies, what I have found. In fact, I was listening to Radiolab, which is a really popular narrative style. I believe it's from NPR. It could be, if not, it sounds like it is.
Yeah.
And I remember once they were doing kind of a fundraiser and they said, thank you so much for your support over the years. We know you love us and we hear from you. And right now we're trying to do this fundraise. We want to get up to 1%. And I was like, up to 1%. I was like, oh, I make basically a car payment from a show I do that uses crowdfunding. So I'm not going to retire on that. But when you combine that with affiliate and maybe the occasional ad and this and that. So there's that. And then there's donations. There are some people that you're like, hey, if you found any value in this episode and you would like to give back to the show, I have a friend of mine, George Robb, that just had people said, look, George, I understand you're a musician and I bought your CD, I bought your coloring book. I want to give you some more money. Either find something else to sell because they feel indebted to you. The law of reciprocity, you've scratched their back. Now they want to scratch yours. So it's about 3 years out. You can do it now. You have to be a little bit of a nerd, but they have now, there are certain apps at newpodcastapps.com that you can go in, take your credit card and buy some cryptocurrency. And there are a few little hurdles you got to jump through there because your bank's going to get a little worried because you're buying Bitcoin, but you just say, no, it's fine. And you can then stream in the same way that we have pennies, which is a very small part of a dollar. There are these things in Bitcoin called Satoshis, and it's like 1/1,000,000th of a Satoshi. And like 2,000 of them is 60 cents. It's a very small part. But what's interesting about this is the listener picks the value. So some people I might stream at 100 Satoshis a minute. Other people I might stream at 20. And then you have the ability, they call them boosts. They got cute and they call them boostograms. But if somebody says something really good, I was like, in the theater, we stand up and yell Bravo. Well, what if I want to sell Bravo? I can click a button and send them 10,000 Satoshis and put in a little note. Thanks so much. This was really helpful. So that is available now. There are thousands of podcasters that are doing that, but right now, mostly it's the nerds, but that is slowly coming on key. So that's another way that you can make money with podcasting.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned Patreon. There are a lot of podcasters who are using that as a way to get support.
Yeah. I mean, I work for Libsyn, so there's always glow.fm. I like Supercast. Supercast is they have built-in hosting and they give you stats and things like that. And it's a little easier for the listener, because in the end, that's who it's about, to actually get your kind of premium content on their phone. Where Patreon, you have to go in, find your RSS feed, copy and paste it. And it's, which was when you were the only game in town, that worked because, well, where else are you going to go? But now there's Supercast, there's glow.fm. There are a couple other ones that have just made it a little easier. So if I were to start today, and I just heard where Patreon moved their payment processing, I think to Scotland, and that's causing all sorts of people, and people are just jumping ship when all the people are like, well, I'd love to give you money, but I can't because your payment processor doesn't like me. And I was like, oh. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a problem. Thank you for highlighting that. I'm sure that there are podcasting mistakes that we should actually try not to make. Would you like to share some of those?
Number one, realize, especially if you're doing interviews, that we like to blame the guest. We're like, well, I've got my microphone, but the guest was just using their built-in one on the laptop. And I'm like, okay, but who's going to get blamed for that? Who are they going to unsubscribe from when I was just driving out in the rain and there was a podcast I was listening to that was not great in the audio department. in terms of quality. And there were times I couldn't hear their guests because they sounded like they were calling from a fishbowl in the bathroom. It was just nothing but echo. And it's, I always tell people there are 8 billion people on the planet. And I know you wanted to interview John Smith, but John doesn't have a good microphone. Well, I'm pretty sure we can find somebody else that can talk about that subject. Now, if it's an A-list celebrity, okay, sure. Maybe we'll get them on the phone and you take what you can get. But, and you just explain it to them that, hey, I want to make you sound amazing on my show. I'm asking you because you have this brilliant content in your head. Yeah. I want to get it out in a way that people can do that. So there's that. A lot of people get really obsessed with the technology. I'm talking into a $200 microphone. I got a $70 microphone sitting right here that doesn't sound, this is more than double the price of this. It doesn't sound bad at all. It's the Samson Q2U. I recommend it all the time. I've got a $400 microphone behind me. There's not a whole lot of difference. I've never had somebody say, Dave, you got to listen to this podcast. Why? Their audio is like butter for your ears. It's always the content. So yeah, there's that. Yeah. It's always, anytime it's, well, I need to do research on this. Or what if I just changed media hosts? What if I go from Libsyn to Captivate or Blueberry or whoever? That's not going to grow your audience. It's like taking a Corvette on a runway in Texas and putting it in a runway in Maine. It's the same Corvette. Your content's not going to get any faster on another platform. Yeah. So those are some, but it's in the end, yeah. I think the biggest one is not getting that feedback when you launch. And Ron Howard is an award-winning actor, director, all sorts of famous movies. He sits in the theater and does a focus group because he knows when people are supposed to laugh and cry. And if it's not getting the reaction he wants, it's back to the editing room because there's no sense spending millions to promote a movie if it's not going to get the response you're looking for. And I totally get that. I just recently made a video for the front page of the School of Podcasting and I did it. I researched. I used to teach marketing, so I know what needs to be there. And I sent out to my newsletter because these are the people that like me because they gave me their email address. I said, hey, I'm getting ready to do this. What would you guys do different with this? 14 revisions later, I'm like, I don't care. I just want this video to go. So I get the whole, I'm tired of this. Right. I just want it out. But I just told myself, nope. Yeah. I mean, I can, and somebody gave me like one more idea. And I was like, you know what? That is, because I had a, there were times in between the video that it would just be the black screen with white text based on a true story. And this guy said, why don't you use your brand colors? Why isn't that the yellow with the blue? And I was like, that, huh? Went back into Camtasia, couple of clicks. I was like, oh, that just, it just flows so much more nicer. And that's what I ended up doing. Yeah, so I think that's one that a lot of, I understand why they don't because I just spent 4 hours on this thing. The last thing I want someone to do is pick it apart. But in the end, if you want it to grow, you know,
that you when you were talking about audio quality, we've, there was a, it was one of our clients who had a guest, but she hadn't told the guest, oh, and make sure that you're indoors in this, you know, quiet space and you have a decent microphone. And he tried doing it in a windy parking lot.
Yeah, not good. Lock up the dogs. Yeah,
and nope, we had to.
There's all sorts of.
We had to do it over again, reschedule that one because it was just no way to salvage.
Yeah, I don't do a lot of this anymore. I've moved on to other things, but I still have a few people that I edit their show for. One of them, they are brilliant brain surgeons. They're fighting brain cancer and they're taking a white paper, which are usually just nothing but facts. And they're taking the people that wrote the white paper and interviewing them about them to get a little behind the scenes of that. So these are brilliant people. But when it comes to recording audio, I swear the one guy, I think he still had his surgical mask on because it was just the whole. And I'm trying to. So yeah, it's, that's the number one thing. And again, I preface that to say you don't need to go spend thousands of dollars. You can make great audio with a $70 microphone, but there's that. And just the whole, I want to make money in 6 weeks. Well, who doesn't? But come in with a little patience. Yeah.
So taking the, your big picture, like what kind of an impact, what impact are you having, intending to have in the world?
Well, for me, it's funny because everybody has their own why. And for me, when I saw the first time I uploaded a file and I saw it come back down in my software, I was like, oh, I see what this does. And the fact that I knew it was global, as a teacher, I was like, I'm going to get to learn about all sorts of different cultures and societies because they're going to have their own podcast and I can eavesdrop. Like I listen to podcasts about women by women because I want to understand women because you're different than I am. When the whole Black Lives Matter and that whole movement was coming down, and the Me Too movement, I can go in and find podcasts on those subjects because I am the middle-aged white guy. Casper the Ghost looks at me and goes, man, you're white. And so I am admittedly culturally inept. I didn't grow up with a lot of culture around me. So I saw podcasting as a huge educational tool because that's my background, right? So the teacher sees everything as education can solve this. And then the marketers come in and they're like, oh, we can make money at this. So of course they do. And so it's, I just see it as, I think it's going to be interesting to see because as we go forward, there are a lot of people that want to do what radio did. There's a great documentary on Amazon called Corporate FM, and it explains the history of radio, where at one point they just quit trying to make it grow and just said, okay, this is what we have. How much money can we wring out of this thing? And they, all these stations got bought up by conglomerates, and it's just, they've just really ruined it. So I always look at that and go, that's what we don't want to do, guys. Remember that. And there are people that are just like, how can we get more ads into this stuff? And I'm not anti-ad. I'm just like, because if you listen to the radio, it's 30% advertising. And I'm like, that does not mean it's a benchmark. That's the thing we don't want to get anywhere near. And there are celebrities that have popular shows that are at that. And I'm like, no, that's that. And then we have this other thing with the value for value system with the streaming Bitcoin. And the thing I love about that is if I don't like what you say on your podcast, well, I can attack your sponsor and say, that guy's a numbnuck. I'm not going to buy your stuff anymore because you're sponsoring a numbnuck. On the value for value thing, there's no sponsors. That's between me and my listener. And so if you don't like me, don't listen to me and don't send me a boostagram, but there's not a whole lot you can do about it. So I like that model. I'm the youngest of my family. So I was like a five-year-old hippie back in the day. And so there is still part of me that's like the hippie that wants to go, stick it to the man. You can't bring me down. So I see those two models. And I think we're going to see the big networks go the advertising way and go really heavy into that. And I see other people using the other methods we were talking about. And I think as that whole, you know, just digital money gets more and more comfortable with people and they trust it. Because I remember when we first started buying things on the internet, we were all like, wait, I'm going to put my credit card on the internet? That doesn't seem smart. So as we start to be more comfortable with that, with the cryptocurrency, I think that has a general potential. That's one of those things, like when podcasting first started, I went, ooh, that has potential. And when I see this, I'm like, ooh, that has potential. In fact, they just did a historical episode, Adam Curry, yes, the guy from MTV. He's one of the guys that invented podcasting. He and a guy named Dave Weiner, and they just did an episode where when Adam was talking, the Satoshis would go to Adam, and then he played a band. And the band has it set up that 20% goes to the drummer and the bass player and the singer and all that other stuff. And when he played their song, all the money that was coming into the show would go to the band. And then when the song was over and Adam came back on, the money went to Adam. And then they played another thing. And so there's no more managers, and it's directly consumer to the talent. And it also goes to the people that make the apps. I could talk about this. If you can't tell, I'm excited about it. I just go, can we make it easier? Because right now, I jokingly say, it's not ready for Aunt Cheryl and Uncle Bud that might not be super technical savvy, but it's getting there. It's getting easier and easier. So those are the two ways it might go. So we'll see.
Yeah. And that whole direct between creator and listener, that is like what Amplify Audiobooks is all about, you know, is creating. And I think that is overall, I think we're starting to see more and more platforms that are allowing that more direct access because frankly, the retailer is taking all the profits model is not, it's not great. We'll just say that.
It's not. And they've already had musicians say, you said she made like $36 in 2 weeks. She goes, this would have taken me years on Spotify. Because it's the same boat over there for the poor musicians as it is on Amazon with authors. And so it's interesting.
Well, tell our listeners where they can find your podcast, learn more about you and follow you.
Sure. I'm at schoolofpodcasting.com. That's my primary show. If you're looking for the Linktree version of that, I have Power of Podcasting because I have multiple shows about podcasting. So if you want to see everything, Dave, powerofpodcasting.com. If you want to hang out where I am most of the time, that's at schoolofpodcasting.com.
And that is such a great resource, as are you. great resource for all of us podcasters. So thank you for the work that you're doing. And thank you very much for being on the show. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us for Audiobook Connection, behind the scenes with the creative teams. Please take a moment to subscribe at audiobookconnection.com. The podcast is sponsored by Pro Audio Voices, helping great stories come alive through audiobook production and marketing. Learn more at proaudiovoices.com. Again, thanks for being with us, and please join us next week.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.